but then a voluntary code. And beyond the voluntary code, we are relying on an ethical behavior that exists and doesn't exist. And that is where the complication kicks in, because when it comes to voluntary commitments and relying on an ethical mindset and behavior, the incentive structure kicks in.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives, from industry leaders to government officials to advocacy groups and their leaders. Together, they've addressed pivotal questions that are needed to create practical legislation. I'm very excited to have Maria Exante with us today. She's the head of public policy and ethics for PricewaterhouseCoopers. She's also on the Intellectual Forum and serves as a senior research associate at the University of Cambridge, researching human-centric AI and the intersection between tech policy and ethics. She also serves on the board of OECD and a number of other advisory boards. I invited her on this show, having the voice of an AI ethics expert from a large global consulting firm is very important and helpful. Welcome, Maria. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
Thank you for having me, Sanjay. Pleased to be here.
Wonderful. Maria, our audience is members of Congress, Senate, legislators in the EU, their staff, think tanks, industry leaders, advocacy groups, etc. Can you please tell them about your role at PwC and what do you do in terms of your job?
Certainly. In order to come to my current role, probably it's worth explaining how did we as a collective, as PwC, end up doing work in responsible AI and my role focusing on policy and ethics. In 2016, 2017, we started having different clients from a different question from our clients in terms of how can I, as an entity organization, control AI? How can I test for bias? Is there a way for me to explain those black boxes that had led us to believe there is a role for us to play in understanding the impact of AI and address the need to control it? And that was the time when we came together as a collective from different lines of service and build the first iteration of our responsible AI toolkit. At the time, no one really in industry was actually thinking about responsible AI. So it was very much a pioneer adventure for us. We need to explore what are the key topics, how they should be brought on top of the technical layers of AI, and what will be the position of professional services company like ours in the overall story of AI. Fast forward in 2024, after 8 years of working on responsible AI, developing a toolkit, taking to our clients, implementing it to ourselves, we've also created a bit of a story around it that says that in order for us to remain in control of AI, but also ensure that the outcomes of AI are aligned with not just human values, but with our needs and our vision for a good life, we need to be able to look holistically and integrate different pieces. We need to ensure that we have the right ethical principles adapted to who we are as an organization. We have to be able to monitor and scan the horizon for the policy themes that are emerging, and also being able to bring different capabilities that companies will have from risk management, compliance, development, technology development under the one umbrella. And that has meant for us really engaging in a discovery work, researchers with civil society in order to shape that story. And while for a long period out of those 7 years, we all know in AI, it's a long time, looking at the rate of improvement of the AI systems, I spent looking after our responsible AI. In the last year, I've set up a new function which brings together different capabilities we have in terms of regulation, monitoring policy and technical developments, but also implementing ethics, being able to remain on the forefront of the whole ethical dialogue and bring it all together. So to a certain extent, my role, it's part the traditional policy role, which you mainly find in tech companies, but also has this novel layer, which is implementing ethics for us and continue to research the ethical implication and being able to feed it into our client work and the way you use AI internally.
So this was happening even way before ChatGPT came out. So that's pretty remarkable that you were really ahead of your time in thinking about some of these things, Maria. Maria, having said all of this, today where you sit, where do you see the biggest ethical risks in the AI system that are being developed?
Well, that is such an important and big question. And I, to be honest, I think about it quite often. And I'm being asked quite often this question, what do you think is the biggest one? And I suppose all of us working in this field for a while, we are thinking in the back of our mind, which one do I pick? Would it be misinformation? Would it be the lack of control? But for me, the one that worries me the most, also because I've been doing a bit of work around AI and children, is the impact autonomous and self-learning systems will have on the ability to preserve our humanity, the ability to operate autonomously from artifacts that influence our decision and action abilities, the ability to have a free will that will, of course, consider different data in decision-making, but we still preserve that ability to make decision. And for me, that is going to be one of the biggest challenges. We know from micro to macro level, AI is supposed to turn the world upside down. We are talking about AI disrupting not just the education process, but the fabric of democracy. And to that extent, it will disrupt who we are as a society, but then how do we perceive ourselves as an individual? And in that process, there will be a ton of ethical dilemmas to be asking, how to augment ourselves in a way that we still preserve what makes us human before we become cyborg. How do we cope with a world where increasingly, we are losing our private space because there is so much data about us being collected. And with the ability of powerful model, so much can be inferred about us, including potentially predicting our actions and decision in the future. And that is that those big questions we'll have to deal with in the next few years, because based on that, it will determine how humanity will look like. And yes, that probably it's enough for us to look at the sci-fi literature or movies to see how those big questions have been addressed. But sometimes we think that will be very much in the future, while right here, right now, we have children who spend more than 50% of their time online exposed to those self-learning algorithms, that will impact their development. And that is the generation that will be coming, that's already being shaped by algorithms. So to me, those were the big ethical questions we should be focusing will be coming next. Of course, there are many others, but those will be the ones that concern me the most. How can we preserve our humanity while we embrace this powerful technology and remain humans, this beautiful humanity that makes us so unique and beautiful in the same time?
Maria, you said about preserving humanity, education, the self-learning algorithms, etc. What measures do you think should be in place to protect some of these things that you're concerned about? You know, whether it's from an education, from children's standpoint, or even just from a humanity standpoint.
The solution we have at our disposal are not as complex as they might look like. First of all, is really being honest about value alignment. So really embedding value in those powerful system and in the wider technology landscape. We tend to focus a lot on what we call AI, but more and more we see emerging technology convergence. There is a lot of buzz on AI, generative AI. We do see an increase in virtual worlds and spatial computing, in cybersecurity and cryptography. So how do we understand how those different emerging technology will converge in platforms that will run our lives and our society as we digitize more of our interaction? And how do we make sure that all those different interaction and the way we design, architect those systems are based on a human-centric approach? So that is probably the first group of activities. But the second one is linked with our relationship with technology. And when I talk about our relationship with technology, I think very much about the emerge of cigarettes as we know it today. They're pre-packed in packs of 20, 10 or 20. And at the beginning of the 20th century, you've seen a range of pictures with children as young as 6 or 7 and 8 smoking. And that has been the case for decades until the humanity has reckoned how much damage smoking does when you start very early. So to a certain extent, I'm thinking we need to get to have a better relationship with this technology to avoid an exposure of diseases or evil that could be triggered as a result of us mindlessly using the technology from an early age or not thinking about how to best use this powerful technology. So perhaps on the second group of activities, not just about educating ourselves about the limitations and the possibilities and the inner works of the machines and the building blocks of the machines, learning together as a society how to have a healthy relationship with technology, how to use it to augment our talents, but also how to step away so that we are able to preserve, as I said, what makes us human, the beauty of humanity, which perhaps it could be discovered by the use of technology, but increasingly you've seen how much this reliance on technology alienates us from one another and how much we suffer from a loneliness epidemic around the world because we use social media to manage our social contact. But social media, it's not socializing, right?
Yeah, so what you're talking about is more of an awareness campaign. You gave the example of cigarettes, which is very telling. Public awareness really has made smoking, at least the numbers have dropped dramatically. But you talked about mental health, at least in the U.S., mental health, and I think around the world, is an absolute epidemic, and it's a crisis of amazing proportion. And technology, as you said, has created this. But moving to ethics, Maria, which is an area of expertise for you, what core ethics principles should be embedded in AI systems, according to you?
We have done tremendous progress in understanding those key principles. And again, if we look at the history of how did we end up with having those core principles that are now being drafted and issued by various organizations, global, local, private, public, is to look at the beginning of the previous decades when a number of philosophers and computer scientists working in AI have come together to really brainstorm what are the key challenges AI will bring. And that's when they discover the ability for AI to perpetuate existing biases, the inability for us to explain the inner workings of the machine, the instability and proneness to vulnerabilities and attacks of those systems, but also the lack of control when you start looking at having self-autonomous, adaptable systems. That's when the first, what we call principles, ethical principles of AI have been issued. And then those first iteration of the principles have then been reiterated by various groups, either by researchers or technology companies. Each company has made those principles their own. New principles have been added, like the ability to look at or the need to look at sustainability issues, the need to really comply with a set of existing regulation, even if they are not fit for purpose for AI. But in a nutshell, those core 5 or 6 principles that everyone is using are around fairness and addressing discrimination. So fairness and bias, transparency and explainability, accountability and responsibility, or robustness and security. And there are some variation around contestability and redress, could be sustainability or privacy, for example. At times, we've seen that some of the principles ignoring privacy because in some jurisdiction, we have GDPR, for example, or we have solid data privacy regimes. Therefore, they don't consider privacy being an ethical principle. But again, in an age of massive data harvest and the ability of powerful machine to infer so much about us, we need to rethink privacy altogether in the era of big data and sophisticated algorithms. So privacy will be another principle we need to include. And looking at those core principles, they provide a solid foundation for everyone who's looking to understand what are the most important themes I need to be thinking about and how do I use those themes to ensure compliance with future regulation, which we see more and more adopting a principle-based approach like the one here in the UK, the fact that in the US we had an AI Bill of Rights that very much leverages those principles. Similarly, in Europe, we have the high-level expert groups principles that have been included in the annex of the AI Act. There is a lot of alignment between different governance mechanisms using those principles as the North Star.
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
So what you talked about, some of these core principles of transparency and sustainability and others. So what, Maria, penalties or enforcement mechanisms should exist if some of these principles are not adhered to?
That's a hard one, because I think what the ethical principles tell us from the outset is to say, this is what you need to be doing to ensure the AI system's negative impact are addressed. But how they're being implemented is done through a series of actions. It's not a one tailor approach for different contexts or different applications. So if you look at something like fairness, we started understanding that sophisticated algorithms could perpetuate bias. But that happens, first of all, because certain populations are not represented in the data set, or in other cases, some predictions were made based on historical performance or action or decisions of a population, but that it's not necessary what happens in real life. So when we've seen those events occurring and we've seen a number of misuses of technology that generated this type of outcome, it triggered an ethical debate. What do we do about situation when AI is enforcing existing inequality? And how do we prevent that, knowing that what we aspire as a society is to reduce inequality, especially in the last 5 years? That was one of the top themes of debate, political and societal, that has kept the headline. But in this process is where when the regulators and public policy have entered the chat room, right? Because if the issue of reinforcing bias becomes a societal issue, the government needs to step in to prevent this macro level impact to happen. And that's when we see regulators building future regulation that will address discrimination one way or another. And we've seen the city of New York issuing a specific law on bias in recruitment. We've seen here in the UK the Equality Act being leveraged as a way of addressing discrimination. So when we look at something like fairness, we know that there will be some elements of achieving desired fairness that will be achieved through complying with a set of regulation, which is mandatory, it's a threshold. But that is the level that is beyond compliance, that all the voluntary commitments that need to be put in place in order to not just prevent discrimination, but to address bias. And I think that there's a conversation, of course, between the different levels of bias. Some of them, they are unaccepted discrimination, also bias we can live in, or bias that is unlawful or unethical. Going back to your question, how do we ensure that fairness as a vision is achieved is first complying with a set of mandatory rules, but then a voluntary code. And beyond the voluntary code, we are relying on an ethical behavior that exists and doesn't exist. And that is where the complication kicks in, because when it comes to voluntary commitments and relying on an ethical mindset and behavior, the incentive structure kicks in. So we do know that we live in a capitalist economy where AI is being developed by commercial entities that have a certain incentive structure. And in those incentive structure, doing the right thing versus achieving higher returns is the ever-going trade-off and debate that happens and needs to be negotiated on a daily basis.
As you said, there's always a trade-off, but let's just say there are some affected communities of some of these, as you said, these ethical concerns. Should they have a role in shaping some of these policies or in identifying these harms?
Absolutely, they should. But how we do it in a way that their voice is not only heard, but it's a meaningful input, that's a separate conversation. And the topic of participatory AI as a form of including voices, the silent voices, the voices of unheard in the design and use in the overall governance of AI, it's an emerging topic in the field of regulation. It's not enough to create those meaningful, intentional engagement mechanism with CINA, and I have been part of a number of those consultation, expert advice, citizen juries. We need to make sure that the outcome is prioritized when we consider various options we have part of policy and strategy. And not only that those issues are being prioritized, but we have a mechanism to feedback. And in that mechanism of feedback is probably the hardest to achieve because we need to create some sort of a permanent dialogue in between those various communities that have been historically affected and a level of transparency and honesty that those involved in building and employing those systems will deliver. And I think those are hard to achieve because we shouldn't assume that lack of transparency is due to malevolent objectives, but it's more to say that we live in complex societies, the organization those systems live in, plus the complexity they bring along. Going back to the original question, how do we make sure those voices are being heard? We need to open up ourselves to have a dialogue. And in dialogue, to be honest and be transparent as much as possible, with a view, of course, protecting privacy, protecting trade secrets and national security and whatever are the information that needs to be kept private. But I think that is much more of a social objective than has to do with responsible AI or ethical AI objective. It's us, on us as a society to get our act together rather than assuming this is the responsibility of the AI community. We can trigger it. We can show that this is the only way for us to ensure AI remains and will continue to remain in our control and align with our values. But it's a more cross-society effort than just the AI community.
So it's a more of a society than a social issue for us to be more open to get some of these communities to be engaged. Do you think we are now, I'm here in the US, you're in UK, we've been talking about some of these things. How might different cultural value systems shape policies for governing AI from a global standpoint or an ethical standpoint, Maria?
I get this question quite a lot when I speak with my colleagues, PwC, but also with the wider AI communities. How do we ensure that the best practices from countries that have a bit more experience on working with AI are leveraged, but also in the same time preserving the local nuances, including the set of values, the state of the economy where AI needs to thrive, and also being able to really be upfront on the set of values and objectives we have in different parts of the world. I think what I've seen was a tendency for countries in the global south to lift and shift and implement as it is the rules established in the more mature AI economies. Until we had this reckoning, when we talk about value systems, the ones that have been used for AI for a long time was a Western view. And there are so many different value systems around the world that need to be acknowledged and AI needs to be aligned with that value system. And that is, again, not something that us in those parts of the world we're able to do. We need to rely on those from mainly the global south and developing economy to come together to acknowledge what are the values they stand for and being able to adapt the frameworks developed in a Western cultures to their Western economy. I know, for example, that the African countries are working on a pan-African strategy. And there was a lot of research and conversation about leveraging the Ubuntu philosophy in how we implement ethical AI in that part of the world. And it's exciting to see that the countries in Africa are coming together, acknowledging that there's so much at stake with AI. They can act as a bit of a new colonizer, a new modern colonizer that will bring the Western set of values, the languages, and the customs and the norms for a society that has nothing to do with an African country. And it's encouraging to see that more countries in the Global South not only become the master of their own fate when it comes to AI, but their voices are better heard in global and international working groups. And their experience, it's so useful to allow us to further iterate even our own implementation of AI in those parts of the world.
You raised some very important points, the new colonizer being AI, and you know, the Pan-Africa LLMs, the strategy that has been done in engaging the Global South. And I hope that forums like the G20s and the G7s, and now you have the BRICS or the expanded BRICS, a lot of these things can happen. Maria, do you think that maybe there are some lessons from ancient wisdom or faith traditions that could provide us some lessons for a morally grounded AI development?
Look, that is a big question. And to be fairly honest, I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer this. But I'm a big fan of common sense. Being able to take a step back from this rush for gold that is the AI adoption at the moment, and really being able to reflect on one hand, who we are as a collective, being a country, being a society, being a continent, but then what this AI story is and who are the main actors, who are the main architects of it, and what is the role we need to be playing. And if we do this, of course, in this process, we will find historical precedents that will allow us, but perhaps we might not find it. For the Global South and the developing economy, most of those countries they've been colonized, they've been part of empires where they had little room to develop their national identity over a long period of time. So perhaps the emergence of AI and the risk or the new type of colonization could prompt a coming together as a nation to be able to define, but what do we stand for and what do we want AI to work towards? Because AI is not the final goal, it's a means to an end. And if we take that step back, we're not going to build amazing AI system for the sake of us playing with powerful tools or create autonomous robots that will make our life easy. Is about using those machines to achieve so goals that are independent from technology. And I think perhaps that is the one exercise we haven't had time to do it because everything happens so fast. We are being given the impression everything happens so fast. We don't have time to take a step back. But I will urge everyone who listens to us and comes from those countries where AI can make a big difference is to take this step back and to be able to reflect and critique how AI has been used in other parts of the world and only proceed where they have a degree of confidence that AI is going to use to power some economic and social and environmental objectives for their own collective, being country or society at large, but also addressing some specific risks that exist in that community. Not just thinking, oh, we have a powerful LLM that speaks so many languages, just as you did and implemented in our educational processes, we might end up empowering our children to use extensively English as a main language when they communicate. And in that process, they will use native language, and that will erode not only the language use itself, but the national identity. So I think it's important to be a bit reflective and deploy critical analysis of the AI phenomenon, rather than just embracing mindlessly.
So obviously you said be reflective, retain your culture and history, and be very mindful of how you are implementing, not just go and implement AI for education as English. Maria, are there any ethics disasters in different technologies that we can learn from as we are implementing this technology, do you think?
We have seen more and more focus on analogies from other sector industries that will help us govern AI better. The nuclear energy is one area, the safety in the aviation and automotive industry. I think that depends very much on what do we want to use those examples for. Do we want to leverage existing methodology that have worked? Do we want to shorten the time from exploring and developing some control versus getting them live and preventing some harms? I think we need not just one or two, we need a variety of such examples and such precedents. Because AI is such a complex story, we've started with the premises that AI is a general purpose technology, only for the last few years to have more of an acknowledgement AI is a socio-technical system where the technology itself, the data, the model, the infrastructure, the computation has an equal role to play alongside the people who are part of the context, the norms, the processes, and the regulation and everything that exists in or defines the context. So I think in this process, us updating that definition from AI being a mere technology for AI being a context and ecosystem is a journey where we've not come to terms how to best describe AI in terms of an analogy. And as a result, we might find ourselves borrowing some of the best practices on how we work with nuclear energy. What have we learned from some nuclear disasters? But similarly, if you look at the aviation industry, when we fly, we never think or rarely think of what are the certification the pilot has to keep me safe in the sky. We do know there are a holistic set of controls that ensure our safety when in transit. Therefore, the same approach is potentially useful in the world of AI. Rather than thinking a defined set of intervention, we think of a safety system that allows us to look at different parts of the AI ecosystem and embed those safety measures as a layer, as an add-on. One of my favorite examples is the safety in aviation and the safety in automotive, because it's something that we use day to day. It's a complex system that is formed of us as the drivers or the passengers, but also the automotive producer, but also the governments who create the driving laws and the certification that you need to be going through. So all this is something that we already know and abide. So you replicating the safety system in the world of AI will not only ensure that we build something that already works, but we also build something we know as a system and we have been used with.
So automotive would be a good example. What you're saying is in terms of safety and an example that has been set. This has been a fascinating conversation, exploring the intricate relationship between ethics, AI, education, getting the global South engaged, retaining cultural values. Thank you so much, Maria, for sharing your insights and your expertise. As we navigate this new technological frontier, fostering an open dialogue and collaboration is critical. So we encourage our users and listeners to stay informed, engage in discussion, and help shape a future where creativity and innovation can thrive under a fair framework. So Maria, thank you so much for being on the Regulating AI podcast. Thank you for your time for us.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.